All right. It is high noon, so why don't we go ahead and get started here. So it's Friday, April 12th, and we're in CWA panel 4305, which is Blockchain, Why All the Attention? We're in UMC West. And I'm Gary Dolson. Among other things, I'm the co-chair of the disruptive tech theme that brings some of these disruptive topics to light, including blockchain. I also have been a technologist and entrepreneur in the software field for 30 years, so that's why I'm up here asking these smart people questions. So what we want to do is we want to talk about blockchain, and I want to make kind of a special point of saying we're going to tease out the difference between blockchain and cryptocurrencies and specific implementation in cryptocurrency. We'll get to all of it eventually, but a lot of people conflate blockchain with things like Bitcoin. And Bitcoin, while it's dependent on blockchain, is not the same thing as blockchain. So we'll talk about this sort of thing as we go on. So I want to give you the first opportunity for a little bit of audience participation. So how many people in the room have read an article on blockchain and have a rough concept? Show of hands. Okay,
wow.
Good. That's
wow.
That's a pretty big amount. So keep your hand up if you would feel comfortable explaining blockchain to a friend. Anybody? I see. Okay, I get like half a dozen. And then is there anyone here who is an actual blockchain practitioner? Someone who's built,
there's a couple.
Okay, very good. Okay, great. Your second opportunity to be a participator in this is to ask questions. And there, if you've been to any of the other panels, you know there are two ways to do it. One is to raise your hand and ask the producer for a card, and they'll bring them up. The other is to go to the online app, and then there's a submit a question for this session that'll let you ask questions. My inclination is not to save questions to the end, but start weaving questions into some of the material I have as we go. I think that's a better way to do it, especially with a panel like this. So this panel, on the West Coast, they would say this panel has got juice. So so to my immediate left is Teresa Cezurek. She is a CU grad with a PhD in business. She is a successful serial entrepreneur out of the Boulder area. And, oh, yeah, she just got named to be the state of Colorado CIO, including the blockchain initiatives for Colorado. So next to Teresa is Moses Ma. And Moses is a strategist, an author. He runs an incubator for companies, including ones interested in blockchain. He's an amateur film director, a poet, scientist, spiritualist, and all-around polymath. Basically, if you're on one of those quiz shows where you get questions from out of the blue that you have no answer to, you would want him on speed dial as your lifeline because he's going to know something about everything. And next to him is Pochi Wu, who is an author, educator, venture capitalist, entrepreneur, visiting professor at Berkeley from Hong Kong University of Science and Tech. So they know a lot about blockchain, and they're going to help you be able to describe to your friends what blockchain is in 25 words or less. So the way I want to start this is just give them 5 to 7 minutes a person, talk about what they've done in the blockchain area, and then I'm going to ask them a question, and to answer a question at the very end, which is, if they were at a barbecue with a bratwurst in one hand and a beer in the other, and an intelligent layperson like the people in this room walked up to them and said, blockchain, why does it matter? In 25 words or less, how you would answer that question.
Hmm.
So I'll start with Teresa. Please go ahead.
All right. Hello. It's so exciting to be here at the Conference for World Affairs and at my alma mater, the University of Colorado. So, yes, what is blockchain and why are we all interested in it? It's a question that is buzzing around the internet and publications, and it's one of these new emerging technologies that has great potential. So let me start first by giving you a very brief overview of what it is. Then I'm going to get into some of the things, my role at the state of Colorado and some things that we have going on and why it's of interest. And then we'll see where some of the benefits and some of the barriers that may be there that might be in place that we need to address. And then I'm sure I'm going to get the hook, and we'll pass it on to someone else. And so what is blockchain? Well, it is a shared and public database in one sense. It's a distributed ledger. You know, people use that and it's like, what the heck is that? But when you think of it, this is a database hosted simultaneously by millions of computers. And because it's not stored in a single location, the information is dispersed across blocks. And so there's no centralized information that can be hacked. And so therefore it's decentralized. It's in a state that is immutable, so no one can tamper with the data that is inside the blockchain, and it's transparent, so no one can track the data in to be able to interfere. And so those things, decentralization, transparency, and immutability, where it cannot be tampered with, are underlying capabilities that make it very, very powerful. And so this is partly why Governor Polis, who was our new governor here in the state of Colorado, said, my goal is to establish Colorado as a national hub for blockchain innovation in business and government. I believe strong leadership will put Colorado at the forefront of innovation in this sector, encouraging companies to flock to the state and establishing government applications that save taxpayers money and create value for Colorado residents. And so, in my role as the state chief information officer, we are doing a lot of things to keep all the information flowing, systems running, and technology advancing securely for the entire state of Colorado. That includes 31,000 employees. That includes supporting 17 agencies like the Department of Revenue, like the Department of Transportation, Department of Agriculture. It includes keeping telephones, computers, smartphones, all of the things that those people are using running. But more than that, it's advancing the technology. And blockchain is one of these technologies that we believe has potential to make a difference, to solve a problem, to alleviate a pain. And so to that end, Governor Hickenlooper in the previous administration established a blockchain council, which is a combination of some legislatures, some people on the governor's cabinet, some people from public industry who have come together to study this and to determine how we can promote it or in the state. And so one of the things we've been looking at is legislation. The state just passed the Colorado Digital Token Act, which was passed unanimously by the House and the Senate and signed into law as the first law by Governor Polis. And what it does, it exempts securities registration and securities broker, dealer, and salesperson licensing requirements for blockchain experiences dealing with digital tokens. Now, that is just a small little subset of what we can talk about here, but things are happening to improve how we can apply this technology. And so what we've just, in my organization, we have just hired the first blockchain solutions architect at the state of Colorado. And one of the things we are doing is looking at an architecture for this that can be used to build upon, to support applications in many, many arenas. You may know, but we're not the only state investigating this. Wyoming, California, Delaware, many other states are also investigating this, have passed some regulations if needed. But and even the city of Denver has a blockchain use going on right now. Denver voters who are on military deployments or living abroad will be offered the ability to cast their ballots in upcoming local races using a mobile app that uses blockchain encryption. And so this here, you know, goes beyond the fact of thinking about, oh, it's only cryptocurrency. I mean, that is wrong. It's so much more, because you can use it in this kind of voting. You can use it in supply chain, insurance. One of the things that has come up in the Department of Agriculture in the state of Colorado is there a way for us to track how seeds get turned into crops, get turned into then ultimately products that are then sold? And can we track somehow in some easy fashion how these steps are taken? And we can track what pesticides might be used along the way. We might be can track where some of these ingredients and final products come from. Are they from from Colorado? We like to use made in Colorado when we can, or do they come from far ends of the world? What's the implications of that supply chain on resources, water? So it's a question of keeping track of this chain in, let's say, agriculture, and then being able to use this kind of information to make better business decisions. And so there's many benefits. There are certain obstacles for adoption, and I'm a firm believer in my PhD dissertation study this. How do we diffuse new technology? And there's certain ingredients. First of all, you need to have a problem that you're solving. Next, you need to have a simple solution, what we would call in Lean a minimal viable product initially. You need to then come up with sort of a proof of concept where we can determine a ROI. What is the benefit? What's the business case? And then will you see it propagate, because others will want to get those benefits? And so some people say that blockchain is a technology looking for applications, and until we get those applications, you're going to hear from some and my co-speakers here, we're going to see it as a nice to have. And some people have asked, well, gosh, it's been around 9 and 10 years. Why is it not, you know, propagating? Well, it is propagating. It just takes some time for it to diffuse. And if we can use those adoption principles, we can help it diffuse. So I will stop right there and pass it back to our chairperson, who will facilitate our next speaker. And
great,
we'll get questions soon.
Thank you. Moses?
Hi, so I'm from Silicon Valley, so the first thing I want to do is say, take me to your leader. I guess that's you now. Okay, can you hear me now? Hello? All right, so let's get immersive. I want to demonstrate three things in technology. The first one is social networking. So please shake hands with someone in a row other than your row. Okay, that's enough of that.
Enough human interaction.
All right, so next thing we're going to do is demonstrate mobility. So I noticed that this conference tends to be a lot of sitting and talking. So we're going to do a wave starting over there. So raise your hands like that, and then go across and then back. But I want to put it on video, all right? And I want to be really crisp about it, right? So like, you got a really nice leading edge there. So everyone's got our phones out, so it's up to you. And then when your arms go up, you scream, all right? So go. And then back. Okay. Okay, thank you so much. And the third thing is you're totally welcome to bring these phones out and text while I'm talking, because in Silicon Valley, we're not afraid of technology. We don't ask you to put it away. We use this as a tool to see whether we're boring you, right? So if you start texting, I know I need to turn up the heat. So, all right. All right, so let's talk about blockchains. I have a really simple definition of what a blockchain is. I call it a consensually validated database. That means that everybody agrees that it's the truth before you put it in there. For example, if Pochi and I went to another room and he gave me $5 and we came back, I can say, how about that $5? And he'll say, I just gave it to you. And the rest of you go, we don't know. But if he does it in public and all of you are witnesses and that gets entered into the database, we can't argue. And that's all it is. Everyone agrees that it's the truth. So my term for a blockchain is the truth machine. All right. Now, this means a lot of things. For example, if you think of the internet as a great big database where you're putting stuff, how much truth is actually being put into the database? Right? There are no way of knowing that. This is why the blockchain is the most significant innovation in the internet space, because we can have consensual agreement on what's being put in there and rely on it. So it's not just the transaction. Imagine an accounting system that runs on a blockchain. You wouldn't have to hire CPAs anymore because every transaction is intrinsically audited. That means it's self-auditing. So that would reduce the costs of things like that. And if you look at something called the decentralized ID standard, they have a subset called verifiable claims. So if I'm going to claim something, maybe we can put it in there and I don't have to prove it anymore. A good example is I have a PhD from the University of Colorado. Why shouldn't I just look at a resume and click on it where it says PhD and it goes to the university and says, yep, they're telling the truth? Because I've actually hired a lot of people, and I have to tell you, resume inflation is really bad, all right? So when I had a hit video game company, and I was tired of video game business because it's the reason you don't let your programmer smoke dope in the morning, all right? So anyway, this one guy came in and was interviewing for a job, and he didn't notice that he claimed he was the lead designer of my product. So I said, hey, dude, do you see the name of the company? He goes, yeah, man. I said, and what product? Yeah. I says, do you know what product we make? Oh, dude, sorry. You know, like that. And I said, this is amazing. So these kinds of verifiable claim systems can actually bring truth to the internet, which is an optimization method for technology, right? So I believe that the blockchain is also important because it's probably the one technology that will be proven to be the best way to stimulate economic activity. For example, I haven't signed this deal yet, but I'm trying to sign a deal with a small country to build an innovation platform which would have a tokenized which would basically aggregate a little bit of stock from all the startups that the government invests in and then turn it into a securitized, diversified instrument. And then suddenly you can actually start paying mentors in other countries to work on your startup. So if a developer in Vietnam had a great mobile app and he goes to an American mentor and says, hey, could you introduce me to Apple because you used to work there, that mentor, it's much more likely they'll do it for an American company than a Vietnamese company simply because they know someone there and there's a common culture. However, if it's backed by a sovereign-supported token that says, you know, we have 150 startups, this is 2% of all of them, it's going to be worth something, right? Then you go, yeah, if you give me that token, that's actually worth more than some stock from some company I've never heard of, and I'm not going to hand over my best introductions to. So we're looking at technologies like that to enable some country or state to become the next Silicon Valley, because that's actually what's up now, is that someone's going to grab the decentralized Silicon Valley of the future. So I would love to. I'm actually active on the decentralized ID working groups. I would love it if Denver would host our next working group meeting.
Ah, okay. So, we'll have to talk about that offline, yeah. See what that means.
Okay, terrific. So I guess that's enough for me.
That's pretty good. Okay. You used five words, consensually validated database truth machine.
Yeah.
That's considerably less than 25.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Pochi, please.
Good morning. I guess good afternoon, everyone. I'm very happy to be here, honored to be invited, and glad that our room is full. I know that blockchain is a very hot topic, and you've heard a lot of the salient points. I want to put a slightly different spin, because what I've been doing for the last decade is teaching entrepreneurship in a very experiential way, and I've talked about this in some other panels. So it's a non-traditional, non-academic approach to learning, and that's what I focus on. So I'm going to have a lot of comments specifically directed at students and millennials, because I think they have a superior advantage in working with the blockchain, and I'll talk about that later. The point I want to make, sort of in summation to why you should care, is, and I wrote an article, I have a blog at Psychology Today, and the title of the blog is Blockchain's Moral Core. I claim that, or my insight is that blockchain is the first tool that humans have invented that actually give advantages to good actors and disadvantages to bad actors. Now, this is really quite obvious, and I'll explain, and you'll say, no, of course. Every tool is, we call it, every technology is agnostic, right? Human society has evolved through improving tools, inventing new tools, improving, evolving tools. Blockchain can be used by a criminal, like any other tool, but if we have, for example, this voter system, this system of voting on a blockchain, then it will make that system much less vulnerable to corruption internally or an external, hacking by someone else. We'll talk about hacking into blockchain. That's a different question. But, corruption or some type of external disturbance, let's just call it that, right? Because you heard already that's immutable. So with a system like that, bad actors will be discouraged from trying to either participate. For example, you couldn't stuff a ballot box this way because you would have an identity, and it would be your vote would have been, your ballot would have been cast one time, and it would be recorded at that, and there would be a timestamp with that as well. And so there would be no opportunity. If someone tried to use a false, like these, picking up a driver's license from someone who's dead, or fake birth certificates, social security cards, and so on, that would not be recordable. That would not be a verifiable identity. You couldn't even enter into this process. So this means that if I'm a criminal, right? First of all, I certainly don't want a record of all of my activities. I don't want to be held accountable for anything. I don't want something that's decentralized, because my instinct is I need to control everything. And by the way, my whole life is built on secrets, right? My secrets. I don't want other people to know. I want to be very selective, and I'm probably lying most of the time. So I could use, as I said, for my own purposes, if I had an organization, I could use that, but I'm less likely, in fact, highly demotivated from invading someone else's blockchain. So why is it a moral core? Why am I saying that? It's because if, for example, we'll use the voting initiative. Particularly because this is public, and not all blockchains have to be public, by the way, and we can talk about that later. Everyone that is participating is saying, we want to share information. All the people or entities that participate in a blockchain are they want to share information that everyone can verify. Because it is good for themselves, right? You can protect your own vote, but you want your vote to count for the election. But you do that, so you have a selfish purpose, but you also are doing something for the common good. Making a choice to do something for the common good, even if it has a selfish benefit, is a moral choice. Right? This is what we complain about with companies, big corporations that seem totally self-serving and hold themselves sort of outside of the law, right? And then they only focus on maximizing their profits. Personally, I don't believe that's what capitalism is intended for. I don't think that's what good management is. That's a different panel session, right? If we want to share information for the common good, that is a choice, and it is a moral choice. It is a choice for the common good. So this suggests something very important in terms of looking for applications. Moses and I work together from time to time, and we've been old friends forever. So in a sense, we're sort of yin and yang. He's the yang, and you've already seen that. And you're getting a flavor of myself, and I'm more the quiet, reticent type. Where was I going with that? See, I've completely forgotten. His energy is so powerful.
More coffee.
Oh, coffee doesn't work. Public service. Okay, so the key application. So he will talk a lot about commercial applications as well as some government platforms, innovation platforms, and so on. And Teresa, of course, is talking about public service. Public service, right? How many of you would like to know that you could, and I don't know if this is an initiative, I'm probably not, but how many of you would like to say, I want to contribute $10 from my state tax to fix the potholes in my street? Right? Theoretically, that is possible with blockchain. You could actually determine where all of your tax dollars, individual, I'm not talking about a gross number, I'm talking about if you live, as my hosts do, on 604 Mapleton Street, that they could say, hey, there's this pothole right here at 6th and Mapleton, and I want you to fix this. Right? Now, their $10 might not do the job, right? But that's not the point. Okay, so I think public service. Why? Public service is for the public, right? We need to know what is being done by the government officials with our money. And where are the initiatives going? We want to support education and whatever, right? Healthcare and so on. So public service is a big one. Why? Because of the transparency. Excuse me. The availability of information. So the blockchain, the aspect of transparency is that anyone, any citizen, can actually go in and look at this database. Now, you won't be able to necessarily identify specific individuals doing specific things, and that's not the point. The point is every action will be recorded with a timestamp. So theoretically, you can have a very clear accounting. The other area where I encourage particularly young people, aside from public service, is the area of charitable work, non-governmental, NGO, anything having to do with social impact. So for the last year, I've been teaching a course in Berkeley and in Hong Kong called Blockchain Entrepreneurship for Social Impact. Mm. So the students all have to come up, form teams, they have to come up with a project that they need to justify will have some kind of social impact. And it's been really very interesting because that's a very big challenge. This is an undergraduate class, and at first I was a little bit concerned that they might not be able to analyze all the information they would need. But I was very pleased to see what they could do. Now, I'm just going to say one more thing about the advantage for millennials. The underlying component technologies, you've heard about databases. Hey, that's been known forever. These databases, multiple databases, need to be synchronized so they're all coordinated, they're all carrying the latest version essentially in real time. That is a kind of a networking technology, and that's been known for a long time. So actually, and the cryptography, which is critical for the blockchain, also known for a long time. So what is new about blockchain is that this person whose identity is still unknown, Sakamoto? Satoshi Nakamoto, about 10 years ago, wrote essentially a treatise, a mathematical proof of a mathematical problem, and the solution that he came up with was blockchain, and this is the origin of Bitcoin. I know we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But think about this. In 2008, 2009, when this paper came out, it actually got quite a lot of publicity. But think about if you were a computer science faculty member Colorado, or any other university. How much time would you put into looking at this and studying it and trying to say, you know, what is there here? The first thing you'd say is, well, there's nothing new here. I mean, yes, it's a new concept, but there isn't something of academic gravitas. However, young people came to this. They thought, oh, we're going to democratize the internet. We're going to decentralize. We don't need government. Bitcoin, the promise was a non-fiat, so it's non-government-issued currency, anonymous. You could do anonymous transactions and all of that. It seemed like a tool for revolution in many, many dimensions. So what happened? So here we are now 10, 11 years later. Young people know more about blockchain as a general, broad generality than other people who are in fact expert in software or in IT. So what does that mean? That is an incredible advantage, right? We are always looking to the next generation, to young people, to use their primarily their passion, their energy, their ability to focus and do something. And now they have a tool that they know better than we do. So what we have to do, not only academia but the older generation, is help them understand the value of what they are going to do. Why should they be doing this? Why do you want to use this tool? In what ways will it in fact benefit society? So that's my piece.
Great. So we have a lot of questions coming in, and they are clustering into some areas. So let me start off with, I think I heard that in public sector there's an opportunity to innovate and disrupt a little bit. I heard in social impact sector. What other sectors are especially prone to being disrupted, and how are the existing major players, the big companies, let's say insurance companies or banks, things like that, how are they reacting to the introduction of blockchain? So, Moses, you want to start?
Yeah. I think before I answer that, I wanted to explain one of my personal philosophies about blockchains. I think that there are three waves of blockchain technology coming out. The first wave are what I call dumb ledgers, and they're just simple databases like a Bitcoin ledger or an accounting ledger. The second generation appears to be Ethereum and the emergence of small intelligent scripts that can run on top of it, and it's equivalent to like an Oracle database script. There's a third generation coming that uses artificial intelligence. It uses decentralized ID, verifiable claims, quantum computing, big data, all of that on top of it, and it's the true intelligent blockchain. So when I see a group saying we're doing blockchain, I say first, second, or third generation, right? And it's important to go to the third generation because I believe that the AI, blockchain, and quantum computing are the three big storms that are coming. They're going to combine into a perfect storm that over the next 3 to 7 years will change everything with like a million times greater computing capability. If you're a company, you should think of yourself as like a catch or a sailboat. You can either head to port and kind of wait it out and figure out what you'll invest in, or you could actually plot the course of the storm and then ride the edge of it and slingshot yourself ahead of the competition. That's what it's going to take for a state or a country to become the next Silicon Valley, is to figure out how to demonstrate leadership of the 21st century. So the answer to the question is, you know, how do large companies operate? You know, if they're willing to slingshot and to figure out what a third generation blockchain is, they have a really good shot. But just saying, oh, let's do a Me Too blockchain thing, isn't going to cut it.
Okay. Teresa, do you see certain sectors adopting it?
Yes, and I believe that there's this thing called the technology diffusion, technology life cycle, where you see certain companies who are real innovators, they will be the slingshot, you know, and then there's those who might follow on, they're the early adapters, and then you'll have later the early majority and the late majority. And so there's going to be a continuum here of companies who will jump on the bandwagon based on the value that the solution is providing. And so, for example, insurance companies have gotten involved. Banks, I was just talking to a bank representative that is, their company has just moved to Colorado and has a whole blockchain division in terms of using this technology. I see smart contracts where payouts, you know, between contracted parties can be embedded in the blockchain. Now, we can do some of that in social, in the public sector when you think about, you know, selling your car and needing to get access to certain documents, whether it's a title or other documents. And so there's going to be a combination, I think, here of private sector and public sector. And I'm seeing certain entrepreneurial ventures, you know, jumping in and asking the question, where is there this problem? Medical records is another area. I was just talking to someone about that. We already talked about, you know, some of the public sector things like online voting, but it will take hold, I think, within certain segments and then widely diffuse.
Great. Pochi? Yes.
I'd like to add a couple of observations. Particularly with Bitcoin, which I already mentioned, they talk about trustless, and the whole blockchain system is often referred to as something that doesn't require trust. And that's only one dimension of trust. So think about this. I think that aside from initiatives such as we have here in Colorado and, of course, all the entrepreneurial companies, when we think about applications, remember, this is about recording some kind of process. So here in the United States, we actually pretty much trust. We trust our government. We trust banks. We trust the big corporations. We actually trust a lot. Now, not 100%, and we can complain and so on and so forth. But basically, our infrastructure is trustworthy. So if you want to look for applications where, or begin thinking, what context, what environment, blockchain might be able to do something that is not possible today, you look at underdeveloped regions. You look in Africa. You look in the Middle East. You look in Asia, where you have countries, governments are unstable, currencies are unstable, banking systems, you know, relatively primitive. You see really amazing kinds of things. So I think it's Nigeria. I may have that wrong. Country in Africa does not have any record for recording births. Okay, no birth certificate. Baby is born, has no identity. I mean, of course, has a name, but there's no. The state doesn't have a record of that. How can a country not only tax, right, but provide education or medical services or anything, or even just planning on how we're going to invest in developing our country? One of the most advanced countries using blockchain is in Central Europe, Estonia. You can become a citizen, an e-citizen, in Estonia, any of us. You can just apply online, it takes 5 minutes or whatever, and you can have essentially a residence, not citizenship, but residence in order to do business. They are also recording land transactions, so real estate. And you can see why. Again, in primitive areas, there is no record of land ownership. So how are you going to manage that? Just to follow on Teresa's comment, though, it is very important to understand technology adoption. And Moses is a visionary, and he loves to say, oh, let's just go jump in front of everybody. And that's great, and that is a true innovative spirit. However, if we talk about enterprise, you have to start with maybe not even first generation, it's kind of like zero generation. You know, what is the least perturbation to our existing process that will give us incremental benefit, meaning more profit? Right, more efficiency. And so you see these things like IBM and Walmart have a joint venture. Walmart is asking by the end of this year, 2019, its suppliers are going to have to upload their logistics information onto a blockchain. So think about this, right? And especially in terms of food safety, that's a great application for this. If you're buying oranges from China, probably you don't want to think about that, but buying oranges from China, you want to know whether that particular bag of oranges that you pick up in your local grocery store, you want to know how many hands it went through, how many, you know, did they do the proper inspections for health safety and so on and so forth. But from Walmart's perspective, they're just saying, hey, let's look at our supply chain. How do we optimize and understand in real-time monitoring how to be most efficient about allocating our resources?
Okay, great. Yes, please.
One more quick thing. One of the techniques that our company uses in innovation is, in addition to brainstorming, we do something called painstorming. So we look for customer pain points.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that 80% of our effort is focused on emerging countries because there's a lot of need for it. But inside the U.S., I think one of the great pain points is around healthcare. And blockchains could actually reduce the cost of healthcare if they're deployed. And I think if citizens want to see something change, becoming vocal about using blockchains in healthcare would actually drive more adoption than being vocal about, give me some banking, you know, on blockchain. The banks would go, okay, sure, you know, but what's it going to change? What's the pain point, right? But healthcare, there's a lot of pain, right? Just think about every time you go to a dentist and they say, I have to take new x-rays because we can't find your records. Or God forbid, they mix something up and there's some kind of problem. But, Steve and I actually work together. He's the producer. And we have a startup that's working in alternative healthcare because I was really interested in what happens when you take certain herbs and how do they interact with drugs. There's no database for that. You may be taking, because I know someone who was taking this, you know, natural herb that was suppressing the effect of their heart medicine, and they didn't know that until they actually did a lot of research into it. So having those kinds of things could really change people's lives. So I think doing a painstorming approach for how blockchains could be applied in any regional area is a really good idea.
That is why the Governor Polis has a new initiative on saving people money on health care, because this is a pain, and we have a health cabinet that is organized around ways to do this. And blockchain technology can be, you know, one of the emerging technologies we can explore to help in one piece of this. So back to our coordinator. So we should answer these questions quickly so we can get to more of them, right?
So to that point, there's a cluster of questions that's come in around the encryption aspect of it and the fact that the integrity of the blockchain is dependent on things staying encrypted and that this distributed data architecture stays consistent amongst itself, and specifically if quantum computers start to become a reality, are people going to be able to break the blockchain because they'll be able to decrypt the ledgers and make changes? So any thoughts on that risk area?
Yeah, we actually do a lot of research in this area, and it is true. If quantum computing becomes widely adopted, it will crack certain encryption algorithms. But I have to tell you, one of the good things about having a strong public-private partnership is the National Institute of Standards and Technology has already issued like a huge program around quantum-resistant encryption. There are like 20 proposals. They're testing them now. Everyone loves this thing called lattice-based encryption. It's quantum-safe. My favorite, you know, it's like betting on horses, right? My favorite is the supersymmetric elliptical. So everyone's like getting involved in that. My feeling is that the first thing they'll break are actually your wallets and not the actual blockchain itself. The blockchain itself, you would need a quantum computer to take the block, break it, change the data, rehash it so it has the same hash with different data, and then that would break everything because nobody could trust anything anymore. And that's actually a much harder problem, to rehash it so that it doesn't change the hash and you can change the data the way you want to. So I think that it's important for a country to invest in this area of quantum encryption. Is that good? Is that Texas?
Yes, actually, cybersecurity is a major, major initiative. It's one of our top things within the state and I believe within the country. And so these standards you talk about are so important. And I think that's one of the things that will help blockchain propagate, and I like what you're saying in terms of this research with regards to the quantum computer.
Yeah. So It's happening. It's definitely going to happen. A quantum computer will break the blockchain, but a ounce of prevention is worth $1 trillion of pain. Because if another country breaks it first, it's going to cost about $1 trillion to fix everything. But right now, I'd say if we invest wisely, it'll be under $50 billion to completely replace and rotate the entire encryption system of the web.
Okay, good. Another set of questions has come in around energy usage. And I think some of that may be related to Bitcoin mining, but I think there are other concerns in terms of how much energy it takes to maintain a blockchain. So any thoughts around the implication that has at large?
I have a lot of thoughts. I don't want to talk too much, though. Okay, I'll just talk. I just want to be the first one to say something quotable that Bitcoin mining is stupid, right? It's really, really dumb. And it's like saying, I'm going to invest in Lycos. I don't care what this Google is going to do, right? So it's going to be changed. Ethereum's already moving to proof of stake. So proof of mining is basically saying, I'm going to waste electricity in order to prove that this is real. So if you think about it, if you were a spammer, and how much does it cost to send out a million emails? Nothing, right? How much does it cost to send out a million envelopes through the postal service? If you could charge just a few cents of computing time, it makes it impossible for spammers to use it. So that's what they're doing. They're burning electricity as postage. So my suggestion is, instead of burning the electricity, do proof of stake where you put up a few cents and donate it to a sustainability effort so that it generates hundreds of millions of dollars to find a climate change cure instead of using as much power as a small country.
Well, and that's, I do think, the important thing here. We need to change the question from energy usage to renewable energy sustainability. And that's why the governor also has another initiative to have 100% of our energy in the state of Colorado be renewable by 2040. So I'm not so concerned about using energy if it is renewable and if it's bringing good value, if we're able to solve these pain points, these problems, and be able to transact business much more efficiently. I mean, that's ultimately, instead of, like, for instance, people having to drive into the motor vehicle department, you know, to do a title transfer, if they can, because we've set up this blockchain technology correctly, they can do the complete transaction virtually and be able to actually transfer the title from one owner to another, we are ultimately saving energy. We're saving the planet. So it has the potential.
I want to just add another comment on that. Moses is right. But the technology, the types of technologies that are being used to both construct and execute, meaning run blockchains, that's under continuous development. There are a lot of improvements, so cost is going down. And there are some other considerations that are extremely important. One is that everything about blockchain is actually a set of compromises between security, speed, transaction volume, and so on. So many of you have heard that, for example, Bitcoin the transaction time is very slow, and that's one of the reasons why it's not really a viable candidate for a currency, despite all these other issues. But, you know, again, there are many things that are being done to look at how you want to do this. So the application itself is very critical. How do you want to use blockchain, for what purpose, among how many people who are going to use it is also very key. So all of these generalizations that you're hearing us throw out really need to be focused on some particular direction that you want to, the pain point you want to solve.
So one more thing I'll add is that the very first experiment on quantum computing was done by Google and NASA. They took a single quantum computer from D-Wave in Canada, and they matched it against 1.2 million computers at Google to solve the Google Maps shortest route problem. The quantum computer beat 1.2 million computers by a factor of 100. So it's 100 million times faster. So what they didn't mention is that the amount of power it used to solve that problem was one millionth. even though you have to use, you know, a supercooled system, the amount of power is 1 millionth. So I think that in the far future, we're going to solve the problem of electricity usage by moving towards quantum computing.
That's a good point.
Okay, very good. So there's a set of questions around how different actors can aid innovation and help small companies overcome barriers to market and things like that. So I want to ask specifically in three areas, so venture capitalists, academic universities, and public sector, like what roles do those three actors play in terms of adoption of blockchain and progress over time?
Okay, so I'll jump in with some things here in terms of adoption. I think public sector here, we can set an example. We can also help set free up the certain regulatory environment to make entrepreneurship and business attracted to this area. We can do things, and we are, like through the Blockchain Council I serve on, to stimulate hackathons, to attract students. We're looking at CU, DU, CSU, all the universities across the state, and having blockchain-oriented hackathons focused on solving certain problems, getting people jazzed about it, trying to see if in the startup community where we're right now, there are applications coming in on what to speak about at the startup communities conferences that are coming up. And it's partly there is an education process that's going on. Getting the first pilots and examples from public sector out there will help communicate that. But those are a few things that I think we can do in addition to freeing, with the regulation.
Yeah, I have a couple of pet projects I'd love to do somewhere. One is I'd love a state to be the first that teaches quantum mechanics and quantum computing in a high school. And then make it really cool to be in that, instead of an athletic jacket, you would get like one of those t-shirts, vests from Silicon Valley, the TV show. Maybe get one of the actors come out and give out an award. Make it cool for kids to be smart, right? The other one is in terms of hackathons, I think there should be quantum computing hackathons. And you should actually open it up to the entire world to compete in a state competition with a guaranteed, a scholarship to the college plus a stapled visa, student visa with it. You would actually be able to brain drain from other countries into the state directly. So I think there are many targeted things you could do, but what you have to do is be really edgy about how you do it so that it combines in Hollywood talent and makes it cool.
You can always count on Moses to add more entertainment. So I do the sober part, right? In academia, unfortunately, I don't know much what's going on here in Boulder. I know that you have actually quite a vibrant startup community. Entrepreneurs are quite active and successful here. And that means that there is an ecosystem that supports their activities. And this is very, very critical. There are only a handful of places, really, even in the United States, and even fewer in other countries, where this type of active ecosystem exists. The elements are there. You have lawyers and accountants and people who want to invest money and companies and schools and so on. But they're just not used to the idea of how do we collaborate effectively to foster innovation, to encourage innovation. So I think, all of you are really privileged to be in this environment. You have a state government and universities and obviously a lot of very bright people, young people as well as faculty. For universities and the University of California at Berkeley, we have a center called the Sutarja Center for Entrepreneurship and Technology. That's what I have been affiliated with. And as I mentioned, we do teach a course in blockchain and entrepreneurship. We have things in data science that are very close to quantum computing. Obviously, the university has as well. Academia is not the best place to look for an awful lot of encouragement, either in this type of technology or in terms of entrepreneurship in general. And that's, again, another topic. So think about just the ecosystem idea. One last comment about venture capital. Everyone, particularly entrepreneurs, always think there's not enough money. There's so many, I know so many really great entrepreneurs. They all have great plans or great little companies, and they can never get funding. And I tell them, from the venture capital perspective, my colleagues in the industry, we always look around and say, there just aren't enough really great deals.
You know?
Look at it, right? The same situation, but from different sides of the table, of course, with different expectations. But honestly, money is never the answer. Money has never been the answer, whether it's in technology or any other kind of investment. Mm-hmm. It's always the quality of the people. Okay? Yes, of course, the project, technology, all of that essential and very important. But it's always about the people.
As a serial technology entrepreneur, having done 3 ventures before moving into public sector, I can say that there is a very vibrant entrepreneurial ecosystem here in Colorado. And yes, people are important. However, money is essential. And you know, I'm always trying to encourage more money to be made available. There's a lot of money available if you have no risk associated with it. But with new technology, there happens to be risk. And so this is the equation, how to, you know, fund these kind of ventures. And you have big companies, banks, who have their own internal venture capital, so to speak, and so it's. But I'm always encouraging more money to come into Colorado for support of entrepreneurial ventures.
I just want to, excuse me, Moses, just add to that very shortly. It is about projects that are more risky, but what is essential and part of what is the human part is you have to be able to communicate that you acknowledge and that what you are doing is inherently high risk, but that you have very sound strategies, plan A, plan B, plan C, risk mitigation strategies. That's the point. That's what an investor is looking at. As a venture capital investor, I know that what I'm investing in is inherently high risk, but I need to know that you, as an entrepreneur, you have already thought through the risk factors and you have a strategy. I, you know, if the four of us were investors, we would all agree more or less on the risk factors. But if Moses was the only one who said, hey, I think I have some really great ideas or connections, he might invest and the rest of us wouldn't. Why? Because he has another further level of risk mitigation that he can bring to the table. And that's the point.
Okay, great. I want to give a little bit of time to talk about cryptocurrency now as an implementation of blockchain. And there are about 2,000 different currencies out there right now. It's growing daily. The market cap of those currencies is somewhere between $100 billion and $200 billion, depending on what day of the week it is. I can see when I talk to people who are not technologists and I talk about cryptocurrencies, you can almost see their brain snap when you talk about the fact that it's not sponsored by a nation state and that it's a non-fiat sort of concept. And so I want to just open that up for discussion. I also, Moses, I saw you on another panel and you talked about the concept of an initial coin offering as a way to raise money for small companies, and that would mean the introduction of a new currency and that sort of thing. So anyone want to start?
Actually, I'll follow up that statement about the ICO. I like the ICO because it made it very easy for companies to raise money. A friend of mine who started a company called Brave, he wrote the Mozilla browser. He decided to do a browser that would simply take away Google's ability to put an ad in, stick in his own ad, and split the money with you. Right? So it's kind of a clever idea. So he said, oh, let's write a white paper. He didn't even finish the technology or business plan. And when he turned on the website, he raised $30 million in 30 seconds with no equity yet. Right? So that's kind of an amazing thing if the companies are good. Right? However, once that happened, this flood of fly-by-night companies came in and started raising money with no business plans. And the SEC rightly stomped on them. The saddest thing about it is I think that for the investor, the key wasn't that you could put in money really easily. It's that it was liquid when you invested it. That means you don't have to wait 3 to 10 years to get your money back out. You could theoretically have a much shorter investment horizon time using crypto capital markets, which I think really deserves to be understood because I think that could power the next wave of innovation.
Hmm. And to be clear, you don't have to be a blockchain company in order to have an initial coin offering to fund yourself, right? So any other thoughts around...
Don't put your life savings into Bitcoin.
So you mentioned Ethereum, too, which is kind of in some ways taking the place of where Bitcoin was intended to go. And,
No. Be cautious with all cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, all crypto. Just be very careful.
There's nothing foundational.
Yeah, so the general rule is don't invest more than 1% of your net worth, you know? And they call it investing down to the sleeping level. It's like if you're still awake at night worrying about your crypto, sell some of it off until you can go to sleep, right? And then when you do put the money in, please put it in for 3 years and don't read any newspapers. It's the only way you'll survive it. So,
for all of you here in the greater Denver area, I know you wouldn't want to call it that. Think about, 20, 30 years ago, the Denver penny stock market. That's what this is. It's very similar kind of a thinking. Highly speculative. Yes, some things are just pipe dreams. Some things might be, in fact, valid opportunities for innovation.
And in your state, the hemp coin things, be really careful about that.
Wait, about hemp?
Hemp coins.
Uh-huh.
They're also the ICOs to do that.
I see.
Okay. Cannabis companies, yeah.
Any thoughts, Teresa, about government's role in helping people deal with the speculative nature of it? And I don't want to put you on the spot, but regulation.
Well, I've been more interested in the potential to revolutionize business and government processes, from banking to insurance to shipping to healthcare, and I have not really investigated the whole crypto area. I personally think it's a distraction from the bigger area of blockchain technology, and I know some people are playing in that and are doing well. Some people have lost their shirt, but I'm not in that arena.
Yeah, okay. That's actually another moral question, right? How much do you want government to regulate free enterprise? And it's just that you have to decide. You have to get to know. You have to learn. And, so all of you are here. You're learning a little bit. Hopefully this inspires you to learn a little bit more, and you talk to government officials, and you try to figure out, what do we want to be protected from? Do we want to be protected from the opportunity to make millions in minutes or to lose all your money? What level? Again, it's all about risk. Everything in life, you can look at this risk issue.
So to an earlier point about discovering pain, there are a lot of questions coming in about how blockchain could be used to help our democracy. We're feeling some pain around whether people feel like they have the ability to be directly engaged, whether they're being listened to. And so I think the voter example caused a lot of questions to come in about specifically how could we engage people more, how could they take a more direct sort of approach without an intermediary to weighing in on public issues and things like that. So any thoughts on implementations?
I'm involved in a standards movement called Verifiable News, where we could be able to track and provide a countermeasure against fake news. It's an incredibly difficult problem, right? So we went into it, and then just the politics of it are immense. There's a group now that's spun off called the Credibility Indicators Group, and what they're trying to do is get the top 100 newspapers to create a reputation token or service where they would vote on whether something looked like it was real. And if you tended to produce a lot of fake news, your reputation score would fall, so that your weight in that Yelp of news would actually be reduced. But, you know, that actually brings a second-order problem because some people are smart enough to game the system. So what they'll do is they'll actually tell the truth on a little bunch of stories that don't count and then use that reputation score to push some false narrative or propaganda. And I can totally see that happening, you know, out of, like, the Internet Research Agency in Russia. So these problems are very difficult. What they're solvable by are new technologies. For example, one of the things we're working on is called proximity verification, that if you meet someone, it'll actually know that you actually met them in person. You can sell that to a dating site to figure out who's a catfisher, like working out of, you know, Nigeria. So those are kinds of things you can do to solve the issue of decentralized trust on the Internet, which is, I think is the core to figuring out verifiable news.
I'd like to jump in for quickly. I know we're running close to the end here, but one of the ways to think about blockchain is it is a method to automate a certain process, such as a supply chain. Now, if you think in terms of automation, and you think about what this immutable record means, and think about the difference between the Internet, which allowed what we call peer-to-peer file sharing, right? You could send a document to anyone from one person to another. What blockchain can do is it enforces peer-to-peer accountability. So what happens then when you automate a process? So in charities, for example, for me, one of the things that is most dismaying about the process is so little of the money that is raised by all these fundraising agencies actually goes to the original purpose, right? Sometimes 20%. Now, where does the rest of the money go? It goes to all those middlemen who actually help raise money, but they also, they're leeches. They're sucking the blood out of the process. What you can do with blockchain is all those middlemen go away. So you have a direct, again, it's like the tax thing. You put your money in and you say, I want to donate $100 to American Red Cross and I want it to go to this particular, you know, group of individuals or this particular cause, and that money needs to go there and there's no one else in the middle to siphon off anything else. So this is really a very, very interesting idea in terms of public service and certainly in the political sphere, because now you would have direct, just as the Internet says direct speech, you know, and fake news, but this would require direct accountability.
So I want to just mention with regards to this greater value, and, you know, that's one of the reasons that we are exploring certain, you know, applications, you know, to find the value for, you know, all people in Colorado. And with the idea that will surface. One idea, however, that is really important is how this can be used to stimulate economic prosperity. And if we can make processes more efficient, and so therefore we can reduce costs in healthcare and in doing business transactions, you know, that will flow through. If we are seen in the state of Colorado as a really forward-looking pro-technology state that is enabling blockchain and other emerging technologies, we may see entrepreneurial ventures wanting to be in Colorado. We may see this workforce come to Colorado and companies coming here. And that's the kind of thing in terms of building Colorado into a national hub for blockchain and other kinds of emerging technology. And that then propagates through to the benefit of all Coloradoans.
You know, something that just occurred to me is one thing you could do is pick a city and create a citywide beta site where you have an infrastructure built, put in, and then invite companies to come and test something at a large level. Because right now, every company wants to beta test it, but it's like you could do it in your lab or you could just release it to the world. Being able to do it at a city level would be very interesting. For example, something as simple as a city-based rewards token to drive restaurant usage. That, if you just said, we have a way to do this, and the restaurants are plugged in, and we're going to compete, you would have the five largest reward tokens companies knocking on your door, begging to test in your city, because that verification or validation at a city is what will take them to the next level of funding and deployment.
Now, think about public transportation. If you had a much more accurate way of real-time monitor how public transportation is being used, think of how valuable that would be.
That's right. The sky's the limit. I mean, it sort of brings me back to when the personal computer was first introduced, and I heard, you know, that a senior executive in the computer industry said, well, I could envision maybe three applications. You know, nobody knew the potential. And this is where we have to take our blinders off and allow this kind of thing to propagate and to have the right ecosystem, to have the right actors, to have the right interest in allowing this to flourish.
Excellent.
Remember, I think this is the platform of choice, right?
The mobile platform, yeah. Okay, I think that's a good note to end on. Thank you so much for your participation.